have an interesting podcast for you today. One of our analysts has just returned from a trip to the US, so we thought this is a good opportunity to pick his brains on everything taking place in the US. Now, at the moment, there are major changes underway in America, from public opinion, from national politics, from opinion towards Israel. So we thought this is uncharted territory. This would be a good time, really, to look at what's going on inside the US. So Shabby, how are you? You managed to make it back in one piece from the Americas?
I'm doing great, Adnan, and thanks for inviting me here. It has been a memorable trip after a long time. And thankfully, back in one piece. This is the question I usually get asked by someone who comes to know about I have been to America. And I have been going to America for the last 27 years, and I have always stuck by the changes that has happened over the last couple of decades, which we can talk about in our conversations. So.
Definitely. So before we begin, I want to remind everyone that you can find Geopolitical Horizons on all the major social media platforms, where you can subscribe and never miss a thing. So Shabby, I think before we jump in, maybe give us a bit of a background, the time you spent in the US, the experience you've had previously, and then we can have a look at your trip now.
Yeah. So I went to the US almost 27 years ago for the first time. And basically that was as a part of the crowd that went from India to fix America's Y2K problem in 1998. That was a completely different era. We called it the Roaring 90s. I worked for many years in the US and went back to India and then, back to UK now. And I have always been struck by the dramatic changes that has taken place. Because of the fact that I have always stayed connected because of my friends and family, I kind of get a sense of day-to-day changes happening over the last few years.
So Shabby, last month, July, was the 250th anniversary of America. What did you see? Did you see a united America or did you see a divided America?
Well, the fact that America is deeply divided and polarized is a common theme of discourse like among intellectuals and politicians. This is something what I have been observing from outside, even outside of America. But I was struck when I was in the US. I've always known Americans to be very loud in celebrations, especially around the national events. More than the religious event, they tend to celebrate national events like 4th of July, Thanksgiving Day. So I was actually taken aback this time where I thought that the 250th year anniversary of American independence might be a massive event for celebrations to take place all over. But to me, I sense a sense of like a mute. People were not really talking about this. There were some talks from the politicians. Trump was making a big show out of the events. But I really didn't notice any major celebrations. The overall tone was kind of quiet. People could sense, like, why are you celebrating this? What's there to celebrate all about? That's the sense I got from just my casual observation of how Americans were reacting to this 250th anniversary.
That's quite interesting. From where I'm sitting, I suppose the challenge was when you're coming up with what to do on this day, Americans are divided about their history. Americans are divided about where America is at the moment, and Americans are divided about the future. So it's quite funny because there was a coalition that set up a couple of years ago to deal with the celebrations. So this had members from both the Democrats and Republicans. And then when Trump came back to power, he was like, yeah, forget that. I'm going to do my own one. So obviously he wanted to really utilize it for his own agenda. And I remember one of the speeches he gave, he was talking about these new people, they're not really like us. And he was talking about Mamdani, who I'm sure we're going to discuss. Mamdani also did his own video, you know, United Colors of Benetton. So it's quite interesting from abroad, you'd think, okay, is this not the one thing you can come together on? Because we've just had the Pakistan-India independence. There's a lot of division in both countries. But Independence Day is one thing. Doesn't matter what part you're from, doesn't matter who you hate, they come together. It transcends that. In America, that doesn't seem to actually be the case. They seem like they're quite divided on this. And, you know, if you can't agree, like, I'm from Pakistan. They agree on the history. Muhammad Ali Jinnah, without him, you wouldn't have got independence. generally in Pakistan, there's an agreement, it was good that we left India. I mean, we can debate that, but that's how they believe that. So even though the political parties are at each other, even the army and the civilian government are at each other, there's a few, you know, the evolution of Pakistan they can agree on. Whilst in America, it just seems they can't agree on anything. The civil war, the secessionists, are they a good thing or were they a bad thing? There seems to be division over that. The future of America, they're obviously divided over it as well. So from abroad, the image I get is this is quite a divided country. And, you know, division in some ways is good because it leads to debate and discussion. But I think there's some things, if you're divided over, it can cause friction. And that's why there is an increase in civil war films about America at the moment. I've seen a few of them. So, yeah, that's the gist I've got. So my next question for you, Shabi, is, we're, what, a few months away from the midterms. Where does Donald Trump sit? What's support for him like? Because remember, you know, everybody got behind him, MAGA. The country's going to pot. We need change in the vote for Trump. We're now halfway through nearly of his second term. What is public opinion like for Trump? What is support like for him? And what do you envisage at the midterms? Is he going to do well or is he going to do bad?
Well, before I come to the Trump question, Adnan, I would want to reflect a bit more about what you alluded to in terms of the division that is currently plaguing America. Again, when I remember 27 years ago, I actually was not positively surprised at how a nation could be united, right? There were obviously differences between Republicans and Democrats, but there were overall points of agreement on a lot of things, like your place, America's place in the world, and the shining city that everyone needs to emulate, the feeling about American exceptionalism, the feeling about why we need to be outside of our borders to spread democracy and our values. And in fact, I remember people didn't care who was the president, right? I mean, America has always been a two-party thing. The Republicans tend to always support Republicans. Democrats always tend to support Democrats. But the overall agreements on key issues which define the nation were always there in place. Now, 27 years now, that's no longer that's for me the most critical observation, right? People don't have a common sense of the nation, the direction that the nation should be going. Where do we go from here? How do we go from here? Even in terms of the identity itself, there are a lot of debates around what does an American mean, right? Which was never the case many years ago. Now, coming back to Trump. So Trump came with a lot of promises. And one of the key promises was basically to end America's forever wars. That was one of the promises. Obviously, it didn't turn out the way that he promised. And when I look at the poll numbers for a president who has just been in the second year, in the second term, the poll numbers are pretty shocking, right? There's overall disapproval ratings from all quarters. Obviously, Republicans tend to support Trump, which we can talk about the dispute between the MAGA part. But 33% was the overall approval rate for Trump, which is a shockingly low number in the America's history. No president has ever faced these kind of disapproval numbers in the second year in the term. His Republican base still remains strong, but the Democrat base, the liberal side of the America, is vehemently against Trump for obvious reasons, and they tend to drive the numbers lower. So overall, if we say 33%. It basically means Republicans and Democrats don't approve of Trump's, and we can talk about why that perception. But yeah, his poll numbers are pretty shocking, and with the midterm elections coming up in November, I don't think this bodes well for Trump and the Republican Party.
And what did you sense? Do people feel in America that Trump's going to do poorly at the midterms, or are people hoping he will do well?
If you look at the polling numbers, they're pretty clear. Trump approval ratings aren't so dismal among the Republicans. But CNN recently came out with a poll just summarizing all of the across the board sentiments. And this is not only CNN. I'm talking about writers. I'm talking about YouGov. I'm talking about IPS polling, Pew Research. They're all unanimous in that Trump is going to lose the midterm elections, and even Republicans might end up losing their majority, both in the Senate and the House.
Yeah. I think, what's becoming clear, I think he will definitely lose the House of Representatives, but all of the seats are up for grabs. The Senate's a bit more tricky because I think only a third of the seats are up for grabs. I mean, he potentially could lose it. But it's quite usual in America that whoever wins the presidency, they lose one of the houses at the midterms. Because, I mean, for you to increase your voter base is quite shocking. So I think that's going to, obviously it means potentially he's going to struggle in the second half of his term, which is usually the case with most presidents, but they've lost a house, so they struggle to get their program through. So Shabby, what did you sense about MAGA then? Trump hasn't made America great again. Is his MAGA base splintering? What did you sense about MAGA? How do they feel about things at the moment?
Well, before talking about MAGA, just delving more into the polling numbers for Trump, we need to remember Trump won by a slim margin. And that numbers came from independent voters, basically, who basically are called switch voters. They can vote Republicans once on time. They can vote Democrats on the other side. The independents overwhelmingly are now against Trump. And this is the main reason why pollsters are predicting a washout for Trump and his party in the next elections. Now, how does it reflect on MAGA? In terms of, I mean, I have heard about ongoing civil war within the MAGA base itself. Now, there is the, as I said earlier, the major 70 to 80% of the Republican base still remains intact, pro-Trump. Well, there's large section of the MAGA, which is overwhelmingly discontent and dissatisfied with some of the promises that Trump has broken. No more wars, for example. And then one of the reasons Trump got out of vote was his promising of improving the cost of living issue for the most of Americans, which hasn't happened yet. Prices have, everything has gone up. Gasoline is literally at historic high these days, owing to the Iran war. So there clearly is a deep split within the MAGA base, not as deep within the Democrat side. We can talk about the Democrats in the follow-up. But the traditional Republicans, which are represented by the mainstream right-wing media channels like Fox News, they're as MAGA, as pro-Trump they can be. But the key thing that I noticed was that the public opinion is more and more being shaped by online influencers like Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes. Their episodes carry more viewership than a typical Fox News show. And watching the online influencers like Tucker Carlson, watching Fox News, both belonging to the same camp, but I could see a vast split between the opinions they carry, right? Typical establishment Republicans represented by Fox News, we know what their positions are in terms of Iran war, in terms of support for Israel. But coming back to the online influencers like Tucker Carlson, they are basically like turning against Trump up and down. There's this section of Republicans which is like dominated by the neocons. In the Smith administration, they are like represented by Marco Rubio, the current Secretary of State. They are for the pro-war, pro-intervention and pro-Israel policies. But the big section is led by J.D. Vance, and he is considered as the non-interventionist, more isolationist approach to America. And this is the base which is now looking more and more dominant over the traditional Republicans, which have always supported openly and aggressively pro-Israel and pro-war policies.
Do you expect him to be the next presidential candidate for the Republicans?
Well, the Constitution doesn't allow it. So if we were to follow the American Constitution, he can no way like even like expect to fight for the elections. But you never know what can happen under Trump. There has been talks around his supporters finding and working on finding some legal loopholes which can help him fight the election third term. But and he has been also giving mixed signals about he might want to go for the third term, he might want to like hand over the reins to another. But he hasn't endorsed anyone for the next elections. So this is an open question. And it can become an existential question because it will be an open like violation of the American Constitution if Trump manages to put himself in the running race for the third term.
So if the Constitution does run the way it should, it looks as though J.D. Vance would probably be the Republican candidate or the MAGA candidate, actually. Is that how you see it?
It looks to me J.D. Vance might be the more favorable candidate. And this is another assumption that the online MAGA base led by Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes, are they able to dominate the establishment decision-making? I'm not so sure about that. These influencers might have like some sway on the masses, but do they have any sway on the establishment which determines which candidates and the deep state which candidates go to these polls? I'm not so sure about it.
Okay, so you mentioned Iran. By the time this podcast goes out, it would have been 6 months since the war of Iran started, and the US isn't any closer to victory. In fact, it looks as though even in negotiations, Iran is in a stronger position rather than America. How has this war gone down with the Americans? How do the Americans perceive this war?
The Iran war. It's an interesting topic in terms of when I recall my previous experiences about how Americans felt about a war. There was never a war which Americans never supported at the outset. Even the Iraq war was supported by 70% of the Americans. But Iran war is something which will be different. This war has been unpopular from the day one. 69% of it did not support the war on the day it was announced. And this disapproval of the war has grown since then. Obviously, since the war hasn't gone well. And I could sense Americans bitterly complaining about the rationales for the war. And then, of course, why has it been going according to what was promised? Because I remember Trump promising to end the Iran war within 1 week or 2 week max. And people recall the victory of Trump's campaign in Venezuela. And they were kind of expecting the same kind of outcomes. But obviously, it's not popular. People are bitterly opposed to it now. And this is mostly on the Democrats, where there's 80 to 90% disapproval for the Iran war. But this is still among the Republicans. The older Republicans, we talked about the traditional Republicans, the evangelical base, the boomers, they still tend to go by the establishment positions. But the younger Republicans are increasingly questioning the rationale for the war from day one, and now have bitterly grown disaffected by how it has turned out so far. And these views are very prominently represented by Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Fuentes, and all these MAGA influencers online.
What defense are Trump supporters giving? I mean, this is a guy who ran an electoral campaign, no more wars, going to end all wars. And this one, you know, you can argue he started, yeah, and it's not gone well. Are his supporters trying to give any defense why he did it and why it's needed?
I actually never came across any hard-blooded defense of the Iran war. That was very, very shocking, because you always have people making those two arguments. But even the traditional Republicans, a couple of them I could listen to on various podcasts and local news channels. This was mostly coming from a partisan basis. We need to support the troops. We need to support the president. We need to make sure that Iran doesn't have the nuclear bomb. We need to support Israel because they are our greatest allies. Most of these arguments don't make sense to the younger Republicans, obviously. But that's the typical argument, and that's why they're not selling. This is the argument that you are presented by the Fox News host, but no one is buying this, to be honest.
So you mentioned Israel. It's quite unique what we're seeing now regarding Israel, criticism of Israel. J.D. Vance openly has said that there is a campaign by pro-Israelis to undermine him and to undermine negotiations with America. So are Americans turning against Israel? Is this unique? Is it happening? Or do you see this as something that will blow over time?
If we are to believe the poll numbers, yes, the answer is clear. Americans are increasingly turning against Israel. And it's not because of the Iran war. Obviously, Iran war has solidified that feeling, but it all started with the Gaza genocide. For 3 years, they have watched live on TikTok, on YouTube, on social media, how the Israelis have gone about like conducting their campaign retaliation against the Palestinians. And as I said, the proliferation of online newscasters, influencers, has actually led to the solidification of this anti-Israeli or anti-Zionist feelings and opinions and narratives within, which was even shocking to me, because previously support for Israel, anything that the Zionists do, anything the Israelis do, was like taken for granted. And no one questioned it. It's like, as I say, it's part of the Akidah, right? You need to support Israel because they are part of it. They're basically the one. Gaza genocide actually crystallized that anti-Israeli opinion, and the Iran war has actually added to that, because there's a big opinion among the American public that this war was being executed on behest of the Israelis. They could make no sense of why this war is important for Americans, except for a very visible campaign by the Israelis which has been going on for many, many years, finally concluding into Americans and Israelis attacking Iran. And Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli lobby have been openly talking about and boasting about how this has been a great thing for the Israelis. So coupled with the Gaza genocide, which has led to the anti-Zionist feeling, and then of course you add to that feeling of a nation going to war because of an outside influence, both of these factors are basically leading to a lot of anti-Israeli, a lot of anti-Zionist, and honestly, at some levels, even anti-Semitic sentiments across the U.S. You have people like Dan Bilzerian openly like spewing hatred and venom against the Jews. You have Nick Fuentes. He is considered the most influential online podcaster in America, openly anti-Jews. He doesn't even talk about being anti-Zionist, but anti-Jews, right? Tucker Carlson went and basically platformed him, right? So obviously, there's a message out there. So yeah, things are not going well for the Israelis. And the Israeli lobby, as a lot of people have noted, has to now resort to what they call as smash mouth politics, where they have to come out in the open, they openly fight. Yeah, I can talk about in terms of what all they have been up to in the last few months and few years, but it's not looking good for the Zionist and the Israeli base in America.
So it's quite unprecedented, actually, what's going on. I think for a long time, you know, if you were AIPAC backed, if you were pro-Israeli, you were guaranteed your congressional seat. You know, you got media support, you got all of that. What seems to be going on now is these things seem to be liabilities now. So when you've got the mayor of New York, I mean, look, New York is not any old city, but the mayor of New York openly says, the first town I'm going to visit is I'm not going anywhere, I'm going to stay here. You had a lot of people like, well, that is what the normal answer should be. Why should it be we have to swear allegiance to Israel when this is a mayor position for an American city, all right? I think the other thing we should probably need to put into context is, you know, even I used to have this view that Jews in America, they are the people that are usually on the media channels, and they're all pro-Israel, they're all pro-going to war with Iran, things like that. Actually, there are different Jews in America. So
So you've got people like Norman Finkelstein, where a lot of Jews are like him. They're American first. They're Americans. They don't really have an affinity with Israel. Israel is just another country. And then some of them have a bit of a problem with Israel because they make Jews look bad. Others support Israel, but they're not like Zionists. And it seems to be that you've got some Jews or some pro-Israelis who happen to be in very influential positions, like the media, like the big corporations. So they always promote Israel being Israel. However, you've got lots of people who are actually American and they happen to be Jews who have no affinity with Israel. So this is quite unique because, you know, when you're in Europe, we have a large lefty movement across Europe. So in Germany, in France, in the UK, you've had lefty governments. You have lefty parties who've been in government. So most of them have always been anti-Israel, anti-imperialism. So the left have got a lot of media time in Europe. So if you grow up in Europe, you come across the Palestinian view. You come across anti-Israeli views. In America for a long time, it's not been like that because in the media, you don't really hear the Palestinian view. You don't have the views. That's why Candace Owens especially was really interesting because she explained she grew up, the Israeli struggle is like the American struggle until she saw the light. So this is actually quite unprecedented. So if I was Israeli or pro-Israeli, everything I've done up to now, the context has changed. All the tactics I've used, they've gone. And that's what I find it interesting because when pro-Israelis go on TV now, they struggle. They're used to the media going easy on them. They're used to just lying. Oh, the hospital has Hamas members in there, and that's why we bombed it. You can't say that now because journalists now who are neutral, they're like, I look bad if I don't question you on these. And I'm really surprised some of the people they're rolling out. Okay, you've got Ben Shapiro who hasn't been too active, but you've got Tommy Robinson from the UK who they brought over to America. Is that the best you can find? They got, is it Abu Musab, the former Hamas member's son who's gone completely against Palestine and is pro-Israel? Like, they got Douglas Murray they roll out sometimes. Then they've got Sam Harris. And are they the best you've got? But I just think, you know, the pro-Israeli movement, they've never had to prepare for the day when none of the arguments work anymore. And we're in an era where everybody can hear what Israel and pro-Israelis are saying, but what they see is the complete opposite. And that's the reality we're in. And I don't think they're prepared for that. So you're right. I see them utilizing a lot of underhand. So we now know the TikTok ban has nothing to do with China. Had absolutely nothing to do with China. It's the law. It's the only mainstream platform that was not in Zionist or pro-American hands. And now they don't even hide it. Because initially it was, oh, national security, TikTok company ByteDance is close to the CCP, you know, military. Now it's just openly clear. And with all those tools at your disposal, if you're still losing the propaganda war, there's something seriously wrong. And I'm actually finding, look, even neutral people, people who are not Jews or Muslims, who believe the Holocaust was bad, who believe the two-state solution isn't perfect, but it's the best we've got, even they are now saying Israel's gone too far. When that's happening, you know, something's gone seriously wrong here. And I don't really see how they come back from this because they've undermined, you know, the narrative that these are the victims. I mean, when Holocaust victims are being accused of committing a Holocaust, something's seriously gone wrong here. And what I find interesting is, rather than, okay, we'll go to court and we'll prove to you it's not a genocide, what you find is they muddy the waters. Oh, if it was a genocide, they would have killed everybody by now. Well, you know, someone needs to tell them the genocide definition doesn't include how many people you kill. It says in whole or by part. And you find the arguments are just getting worse and worse. Rather than dealing with the arguments, it's actually muddying the waters. So the fact that in America, opinions changing about Israel is quite unique. You know, this is the country, it's a superpower. This is a country that funded it and armed it. And this brings me nicely to our next question, what we're seeing in the Democrats. We've seen some significant Muslim victories recently. The mayor of New York is a Muslim. We've seen some success in Michigan. So what's going on here? What does this tell us about the Democratic Party?
We talked about the Republicans, Adnan. On the Democrat side, there has been a growing dissatisfaction with overall the direction and the sense of what America is now and the direction it's taking. There has always been an influence of the left-leaning ideas among the liberals, because liberals basically tend to form an umbrella of all the different shades of liberalism. Though politically, leftism was never a strong, a potent force in America. But the sentiments were always there. They were marginal, represented by likes of Noam Chomsky and Noam Feinstein. But they were not, these were not mainstream figures who were shaping public opinion. But because how things have gone wrong, and people trying to find ways, trying to find a understanding, trying to explain what are the reasons behind things going wrong, leftist narratives around anti-billionaires, anti-corporate policies, that narrative has started to gain momentum. In fact, to an extent, I recently saw a poll of Democrats. Most of them, they don't believe in capitalism anymore. Like, they said, like a Muslim nation and polling, that they don't believe in Islam anymore. Right? the victory of Mamdani in what is the capitalist Mecca of New York, who is openly socialist mayor, though since leftism is not a very popular slogan, they tend to sell themselves as socialist Democrats, but they are basically leftist, moderate leftist, I would say. The victory of people like Mamdani, right, represents that shift in the Democrats' base and their thinking, right? Unlike the Republicans, where there's an influence of the evangelicals, the boomers, which tends to be pro-establishment, the standard pro-American policies and the standard American narratives and explanation about the world. On the Democrat side, there's no such divide, right? Bernie Sanders, the rise of Bernie Sanders a decade ago basically was an initiation of the trend of more and more attraction towards leftist solutions and leftist narratives. And this has, because of the things that have been going on with Americans itself in terms of their overall unhappiness with their economic issues, overall jobs, losing jobs due to globalization. Americans were really hit hard, especially the working class. The working class sentiments, they tend to get represented by the Democrats. So Democrats they are overwhelmingly now, I could say, just looking at the pollings, more and more leftist leanings, more and more discontent with capitalism, especially in the campuses and where the younger generations tend to take on the mantle of the nation and get groomed into future politicians. So it's not looking good. The Democrats' establishment still remains firmly, because they represent establishment, but they look very increasingly out of touch with the main base. And that's why you see a lot of Mamdani clones.
They didn't support Mamdani, did they, in his run for the New York mayor?
They did not. Mamdani did not get endorsements from mainstream Democrats, the establishment Democrats. He just ran on a cost of living and anti-Israeli genocide position. These were the two positions which were not popular among Democrats and increasingly independents. And these are the numbers which took him to power as a mayor of New York.
Who do you see potentially, or who do you see in terms of even a list, who's going to stand up to be the next president for the Democrats? Who are the next presidential candidates? Because they're looking like a really divided party at the moment.
Yeah, they're really divided because the establishment is not willing to budge and to bring their policies and their policies in line with the mass, which is demanding. Mamdani, obviously, is the most popular if you go by just the perceptions you get just listening to people on the Democrat side. But Mamdani cannot fight for presidential election because he's not a naturalized citizen, a bond citizen, which is the condition for anyone who has to fight for the presidential position. Next is AOC, who tends to get presented as socialist Democrats. Not still a big yes from the mainstream establishing the Democrats, but this is the main problem with the Democrats. People can sense they have a chance to win the next elections, but because they cannot get their acts together in terms of putting together a viable candidate, right? That might basically cost them the next elections, even if they have big chances of basically defeating Trump or his nominee the next elections.
Yeah, it's a bit like the UK. The public just don't vote for a divided party. When you're divided, the public just won't vote for you because, you know, how can we trust you when you're divided amongst yourselves? And the Democrats just don't hope this civil war is playing out in public. Like, this should really be behind closed doors, but it's being played out public. I don't know if you went to New York. How's Mamdani doing? It's been about a year. Is he doing good? Is he doing bad? How are New Yorkers seeing it? They obviously made a lot of promises. How is he doing?
Mamdani made a lot of promises. And the thing about Mamdani is that he is making a good use of social media to talk about. He's in control of his narrative. So any small achievements, he's great at advertising it, making sure that it gets heard and it gets discussed. Just going by the public opinion polls, he has a strong favorability polling numbers. I think I have the strongest of any mayor I have seen in America's history. So he's doing well, but it remains to be seen the big promises that he has still to be like fulfilled. The small promises he made, he has followed up on that one. There's a perception that he's trying to at least do some good. There's a perception among the public that he's honest. There's a perception amongst the public that he's a different kind of politician, because Americans have grown very skeptic and very disillusioned with the main political class, right? And he represents a departure from that political class. Right. Even though Trump even also represented that departure, but that's a different story. Mamdani is that new hope, and going by how he has performed so far, there's a strong public opinion in favor of him. At least in New York, I could sense that.
My next question is: how do Americans view their country's global position? Do they view America as it's doing well in the world? Do they believe America is in a strong position? Or did you experience when you were there that people are quite negative about America and the world?
Americans still broadly favor active U.S. role in the world. This has been traditional, like American, part of the American identity. We are an exceptional nation, though that feeling has tapered down. But they still feel America should be globally active and involved. But they are looking for more and more, like, we should be working with other nations. Trump's unilateralism is not so popular, which is a sense I could get. There's a growing sense of disagreement over what that leadership means actually, right? We are global leaders. We set the agenda across the nations, but there's a big discussion around what that global leadership means actually. Should we be there promoting democracy? Should we be interfering in internal affairs of different nations? That's a big question that being debated. I don't see that isolationist tendency growing stronger, which was the sense I could get when I was outside of the US. But when inside the US, I could not notice that. Yeah, there are question marks about what America should be doing, what should be our role. I don't see America receding from the global position that it has always taken. And obviously the public opinion is not so vehemently against it.
So there's three big things America's done this year in its own hemisphere. It kidnapped the Venezuelan president at the start of the year. It's literally causing a complete crisis or failure in Cuba. And again, Trump keeps talking about Greenland taking over Greenland. How is this going down with the American public? Are they up for this, or do they see this as, again, more wars?
Interestingly, the Venezuela war, the kidnapping of Maduro didn't elicit extreme reactions because it was quick. It was over within a few days. Americans are very hostile to their own troops getting killed. There was no casualties on the American side. It turned out as far as Americans are concerned. And that might be the reason that Americans were not so... it was difficult to detect public opinion. And this itself says a lot. compared to the public opinion on Iran, which tends to be very sharp, right?
What about Greenland and Cuba? I mean, Cuba, it looks as though the US is literally destroying the country. Yeah. You got Cuba going on, and then obviously you got Greenland as well. What's the American views about this? Do they see this as a positive thing or a negative?
On Cuba, when I was following the public reaction on Cuba, typically we end up consuming a lot of leftist narratives, right? So that basically tends to distort your opinion about what Americans might be feeling about Cuba. But I could not detect any American like public opinion at the general level, which is like anti-American policies on Cuba. They are mostly indifferent. I think that alluding to one of the other lobbies which is very strong in America is the Cuban lobby. So there's a Cuban elite, especially based in Florida. They tend to be quite influential in the narrative war, and they tend to be very very anti-communism, anti Fidel Castro. So they are significantly quite strong in terms of shaping the public opinion. So I don't see any hostility amongst the public opinion on American policies about Cuba, even though we know how brutal the policies Americans have been. And this makes me feel that American hostility to war is not driven by principle, it's mostly driven by the outcomes. The moment Iraq war went AWOL, they turned against the Iraq war. Go back to the Vietnam War. After a few years, the Vietnam War didn't turn as they expected. Suddenly, the public opinion turns the Vietnam War. So if the war goes well, cool. If it doesn't go well, then the swords are out and we need to blame the politicians.
Greenland. Do Americans know where it is? Do Americans know that Trump wants to take over, make it the 52nd state of America?
The discussion around Greenland has actually calmed down, if you notice, in the last couple of months. So I didn't see too much discussions or narratives around Greenland, because obviously the focus has shifted to Iran and everything that's happening in the Middle East. Typically you would see hostility towards Trump's pronouncements on Greenland from the liberal side. It was mostly around sense of embarrassment, sense of we don't need to be talking about this so openly. So even the establishment among the liberals, they're not so openly hostile towards pronouncements. They were in basically they had issues around how Trump is going about being so openly aggressive against their traditional allies in Europe, which is like a bedrock of traditional American European alliance. So that feeling is very strong among the liberal side. But as I said, Greenland has died down. Who knows? Trump might bring it up once again as a social post, and suddenly everyone is discussing Greenland again.
My next question for you is, I've got a list of countries and just wanted your opinion. What did you sense the American public view is of these countries? So if you begin the first one, China.
China, there's a sense of awe in terms of what China has been able to achieve. At the public level, they talk about the different Chinese cars, the quality, and they want to have those cars. So that's a sense. At the establishment, the sense of fear and foreboding in terms of the rising power of China and a potential threat to America. There's a mix of awe, and there's a mix of foreboding, and this has, especially at the establishment level, this has driven American pivot towards Asia, because the elites realized the threat that China poses as a continental superpower in the future, and the game plan from Trump to Biden to again to Trump has been to contain China. This is a marked shift from pre-Biden days, where China was considered a partner, where America could outsource its manufacturing of its cheap products to China, and they can focus on high-value products and some goods and services. Obviously, things have turned, and Chinese have basically risen more than the Americans expected. That is the sense they get. I could get that Americans never expected China to be becoming, coming to that level of economic and military power to an extent that now it started to pose a threat to China. So, yeah, mixed feelings, but there's a sense that America is losing the superpower game to China.
And Russia?
Russia, that's interesting because, again, coming back to the MAGA opinion, there's a big section in MAGA which sees Russia, which are basically more ideologically going towards nationalist Christian like narratives. And they see Russia as a power which is representing Orthodox Christianity. And I was surprised to see them being pro-Putin. And Tucker Carlson is one of those influencers which makes that case. Candace Owens, they make a case for America being a Christian nation, having lost its identity because of a host of issues we can talk about. And they see Russia as that one power which is standing against liberalism, which is standing against like forces which are out to destroy Christianity. So from that perspective, I could see a sense of like Russia being something that we need to support. And a lot of the opposition to Ukraine war in that session comes from that perspective, that we are fighting Christian power and there are elites and the global liberal elites, a cable of elites which want to destroy Christianity, and Russia is standing up for them. So interesting observation. But I don't know how much deep that sense is. But if you listen to some other influencers, then you get a sense that they also represent a significant section of the feeling that people have, especially in MAGA, towards Russia. On the liberal side, out and out, hostile against Russia, against Putin, is out to destroy the liberal order, is out to destroy Europe. So we know the traditional narrative on Putin on the liberal side. But what was surprising for me was the narrative on the pro-Christian narrative, Russia being represented, that power which is supporting Orthodox Christianity, that was something, a revelation for me.
And Europe?
Trump has been openly hostile against Europe. I could sense a sense of, like, especially when you read the New York Times and the mainstream establishment liberal opinion makers, that sense of being horrified at how the American alliance with Europe is breaking up. But on the MAGA side, the split is more towards right versus left than being pro-Europe and pro-America. So in Europe, a lot of the right-wingers in America, they support the right-wing movements, the far-right in Europe, Tommy Robinson in Britain, Viktor Orban in Hungary. Even that feeling carries on to why they support even Putin to an extent. So their feeling, their opinions are mostly determined by pro-right, far-right and the liberal section. So it's not a continental, like earlier Americans used to think about Europe as someone from amongst us with the historic roots. They are one of us, the traditional white transatlantic alliance. But I don't think that is the overall narrative that you can sense when you listen to these opinion makers in both on the left side and the Republican side.
And the last country, Canada?
Canada. I have been traveling to Canada for a long time, and I could always sense that these are the twin nations, very close to each other, both at people level, at the trade level, at the political level, right? But because of Trump's pronouncements in the last few, in the last term, openly hostile to Canada, he has been talking about taking over Canada as this 53rd state, calling Canada's prime minister as a governor of Canada. This has horrified Canadians because they are not used to listening to this kind of hostile pronouncements from a neighbor next door, which they have been traditionally close to. Right. Obviously, because, as I said, because of family ties, because of trade ties, the border between Canada and America is used to be like quite fluid. You can just walk in and walk out if you have the documents. It's still the case, but I could sense a sense of, especially talking to my relatives in Canada. For the first time, I heard them having openly pro anti-American opinion is obviously among the Muslims, the anti-American opinion is quite pronounced. But even though among the non-Muslim traditional Canadians typically tend to be very liberal on the liberal side, right? Pro-immigration, like open borders, which is not the sentiment in America, the dominant sentiment in America. So you can see a split, ideological split happening between the Canadian masses and the especially the far right wing in America.
The final question, Shabi, from what you experienced in America, what do you see as the future of America? What did you sense of the Americans? What do they feel about the future of their country, their role in the world?
We talked about Americans being divided. We could sense that division. Americans are divided. Americans are united on one thing, that we are not great again, right? That's why the appeal behind Make America Great Again. The assumption is we are no longer great. The whole debate is around why are we no longer great and what can we do to regain our position. So you could sense a sense of despair when I talked about the muted reaction to the 250th anniversary. Americans are increasingly turning very pessimistic about the country's long-term future. No matter which poll you see, both on the liberal side and the conservative side, the Republicans, a recent poll I saw that 59% of Americans actually feel that their best years are behind it. It clearly shows that they don't see the future as bright as the past was. Right. And the pessimism is strongly linked, Anand, to politics and the institutions. Right. You just pick up any poll. There's a little downfall in the people's like feeling of if the institutions are working or not. Right. You see opinion about politicians, mainstream politicians, you still see opinion about mainstream media, you see opinions about mainstream. I mean, it goes to the sense that people don't even believe the official narrative on things like COVID virus, right? It's a symptom of how Americans feel this discontent and disconnected from the institutions. So this pessimism, as I said, people are feeling the institutions are not working, politicians are not working, things are not going well. And this is basically alluding to start Americans feeling more and more bitter about the future. We haven't talked about AI, the impact of AI, right? I talked to a lot of graduates coming out from America, from the universities. I mean, there's a complete sense of despair, right? The feeling of what are we going to do with our education when everything is being automated by AI, right? Maybe that's a topic for another podcast. It's a big topic for we can talk about. This is contributing to a lot of discontent, the feeling about future job prospects, the feeling about the economic not doing well, the feeling about the cost of living crisis. I remember in my days, 25 years earlier, people never felt that things, prices never ever increased, right? This time, people are all talking about prices, right? From bread to gasoline to daily essentials to rent, right? Though the prices have gone up by multiple percentages, but if you see the numbers, the wages have not gone up, the income have not gone up. The growing divide between rich and the poor is a big discussion already. So, if you talk about an American, he still feels proud to be an American. That sense is already there, but they are increasingly doubtful about where are you headed, what is the purpose. Right? Why are we having those wars? And increasingly sounding skeptical about capitalism itself. Right? This is the most marked observation that I could sense, that you stop to have like that sense of your ideology itself. Right? Which reminds me a lot of about the mode I used to read about how things people are feeling in the Soviet Union. And the discussion that were going on when things were not turning at the Politburo promised a bright future for the average public in the USSR. So the sense it reminded me a lot about how the overall public opinion was and public mood was in the Union, Soviet Union before it collapsed.
Shabi, me and yourself, we're old enough to remember the dying days and the decade after the Soviet Union. Yeah. But it's actually quite shocking the similarities actually that America's what they're going through and the dying days of the Soviet Union. And, you know, this isn't like just a coincidence. You know, this whole America first, you know, the Soviet Union in the end, it was Russia first before the USSR, before the Wolf Pact. The Soviets, one of the first things Gorbachev did when he came to power was take him out of the Afghan war. And that's one of the first things, well, Trump was the one that negotiated the deal with the Taliban. And the communists in the Soviet Union, they turned to a bit of an outsider, Gorbachev, in the hope that he could stop the malaise and the decline. And the Americans have turned to a reality TV star, complete outsider, not any political experience, in the hope that it will change. And, you know, I've said this before, when the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, everybody expected the Red Army would get sent in to teach him a lesson. Gorbachev made the decision, we've got bigger priorities, we've got other issues going on. So the most important republic, they let go. 2 years after that, the whole Soviet Union was gone. You know, nobody thought it would go anywhere. So it's actually quite shocking, the similarities. But Shabi, thank you for your time today. We've delved into quite a lot about your trip. But yeah, really good insight, really. What's going on, how the Americans are feeling. We should get you on to explore this topic further, actually.
I look forward to this, coming back to this conversation, Adnan, because there are important days and big events ahead. And we need to keep a close eye on what's going on in America, because it impacts every one of us. But thank you for the opportunity today, Adnan. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
No problem. Thank you for your time anyway. So if you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, please check out our website. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website, where you'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Adnan, and thank you for listening.